Last year, or really the past few years, one of the great things about springtime in for me normally is that chevra of young rabbanim, of which I am the oldest, goes to Rav Schechter's office in the OU every Friday, and we sit there and we watch him paskin shilas essentially, and we get to talk through a lot of the shilas that he's dealing with from the OU and from outside of the OU, and it's really a wonderful experience and something that we miss terribly this year, that being unable to do that. But I remember last year when we were in the OU office one time, it happens from time to time actually, a group of seventh graders came to visit the OU, and they were going to get a demonstration on rare birds from Chaim Loiki, and all sorts of interesting presentations from different people at the OU. But how could you visit? They visit the OU on a Friday and not have a presentation from the posek of the OU and one of the poskei Hadar from Rav Schechter. So they came in to hear from Rav Schechter, and we followed along because we wanted that we're there for to be with Rav Schechter, so we wanted to see what happens. So he spoke to this group of seventh grade boys, and as he was saying his Dvar Torah, the boys were jumping around and acting as boys sometimes do after a very long bus ride. And Rav Schechter, after they left, said they didn't seem too interested in what I had to say. But I was listening to what he had to say. I thought it was very interesting. So one of the things that he had to say was that he raised the following question. He pointed out that Shimshon is referred to by the Navi as a Nazir Elokim, whereas in the Chumash, we talk about a Nazir being a Nazir Hashem. So why the difference? Why would in the Chumash be a Nazir Hashem and the Navi be a Nazir Elokim? Why would there be a difference between the two? So that's question number one. Second, on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu completed the Mishkan and its Kelim, the Nesiim each brought their special Karbanos to the Mishkan, which included the agalos, six agalos and shnei bakar, six covered wagons, and according to some rishonim, those wagons were totally empty, and 12 oxen. And apparently, even though each shevet presented an ox, every two shvatim had to share a wagon. So, as per the command of Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu passed those oxen and wagons over to the Levim so that they can carry the Mishkan and its kelim. So, a couple of things about this. First of all, there's a basic rule relating to the Mikdash that ein anius b'makom ashirus, that we don't skimp on costs when it comes to the Mikdash, meaning there's no poverty in a place of wealth, meaning this is not an area where we go cheap. A person could go cheap on his own living arrangements, on his own lifestyle, but when it comes to a Makom Hashiros, when it comes to the Mikdash, we don't go cheap on things. So why were the Nesiim suddenly so cheap, so to speak, in their donations, that every two Shvatim had to share a wagon? So that's one thing about these wagons. A second thing about these wagons to consider is that these wagons that probably most of us never even realized existed, is that these wagons might have already been alluded to in Sefer Bereishis. Yosef sends a message back to his father after he reveals his identity to his brothers. He chooses agalos to convey some sort of message. So we're familiar with what Chazal have to tell us, that the allusion was to Egla Arufa, Rashi quotes it, and that was the last sugya that Yosef had learned with his father. It's the last sugya that he learned together with Yaakov, and that was Vatchi Ruach Yaakov Aviyah, and that Yosef, even though he's in Mitzrayim, he still has this sense of remembering the learning, and he's still Humo Shel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. He's the one that's ruling over Mitzrayim as opposed to Mitzrayim ruling over him. However, the Das Akenim suggests that Yosef's message was actually not referring to Egla Arufa, which is a bit of a forced association anyway. Agalos are not an Egla, it's not Agalos are wagons, they're not baby cows. Das Akenim suggests that Yosef's message was actually about Agalos, it was actually about wagons, and he was alluding to the wagons that one day the Nesiim would use to carry the Mishkan. Now, why would those Agalos inspire a reaction of Vatchi Ruach Yaakov Aviyah? Because one day there are going to be wagons? One day the Jews are going to have wagons to transport the Mishkan? Why is that something that inspires Yaakov, revives him, encourages him after the terrible episode in his family of Mechiras Yosef? So I think the yesod is, the Sforno explains that the six wagons represented, the Sforno writes, an os achva beinehem. that it was a sign of brotherhood. It was a symbol of brotherhood between them, because the way that they demonstrate achva is that there was only one wagon for every two shvatim, which demonstrates the ability to share with each other, and that they identify each two shvatim had to come together for something. By definition, they had to come together for something, and therefore the wagons were a sign of achva, and that in fact had to be the last step before we have Ashras HaShechina, before we could experience a Mishkan, before we could experience the concentrated presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that we have by the Mishkan. Because the Pasuk says in Parshas Zos HaBracha, Vayihi Bishurin Melech Bis'aseif Rosh Hayam. Hashem is Melech and provides Ashras HaShechina only Bis'aseif Rosh Hayam, when our leaders are joined together, when there's an asifa. So it was this achva that would ensure the Ashras HaShechina. The Sefer Charedim explains, the Pasuk in Iyov says, V'hu be'echadu mi yeshivenu. And literally it's, he's one, and who will answer him? But if that's all that it means, that he is one, the Pasuk should not say, V'hu be'echad, it should be, V'hu echad. That's how you say that he is one. What's v'hu be'echad? Maybe the Pasuk, Sefer Charedim says, maybe the Pasuk is telling us that the Ashras HaShechina only happens when we are be'echad. When we're the v'hu be'echad, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come, when we are a unified nation. So he will rest among a unified nation. He will rest among a nation that's experiencing a sense of togetherness, a sense of achdus. So as it turns out, the Nesi'im weren't being frugal, they weren't being cheap when they keep the number of wagons to a minimum. It wasn't a violation of Ein Anius Makom Ashiros. They were sending a critical message of unity among the leadership. There's lots of talk about unity all the time in Klal Yisrael, but without unity among the leadership, without unity among the Nesi'im, you can forget about the rank and file. Everybody else is just going to line up behind their leaders, whoever they admire, and they'll disrespect those that their leaders disrespect. So it's critical that everything's got to start at the top, and therefore the Nesi'im have to make this clear statement that we are together. Yaakov had already been told Yosef was alive, right? But yet, when he sees the wagons and what they represent, that's when Vatzchi Ruach Yaakov Avim. That's when he feels comforted. The news of Yosef's survival is not nearly enough, because Yaakov had to be thinking about, like, how his family could possibly move on from this. Like, what exactly is, you know, the Seder going to look like next year? Well, I guess they didn't have Siddurim yet. You know, what's Thanksgiving dinner going to look like next year when Yosef is sitting around the table with his brothers? Like, how do you move on from something like that? Oh, you remember that time, you know, funny story, when you sold me and, you know, were ready to leave me for death, and then I became the most powerful person in the world, and I controlled your fate and whether you should live or die? Like, how do you go on from that? Someone, I think tweets are not often well translated into verbal expression, but someone tweeted last year the description of, like, what is the conversation in the car ride back after the fellow brings his wife, accusing her of being a sota, and she's vindicated. Right? How does that conversation go exactly? You know, a lot of silence, and he says something like, "You know, I never realized how tall that coin." And just stop it. Quiet. Like, how does it work? How do you move on from something like that? It's hard to imagine. Like, what the next chapter is. How do you go on from something like that? So the dream of having Shiftei Kah wasn't just to have 12 tzaddikim as sons individually, but it was to have a unified Klal Yisrael. How could that possibly happen after Yosef had suffered the way he did, following his brother's jealousy of him? So when Yaakov saw the symbols of these wagons, where the leaders joined together, he understood that the symbol of unity and peace was on Yosef's mind already, and that Yosef was ready to move on. Vatchi ruach Yaakov Aviem. You know, when Yaakov gathered his children around his deathbed, the Pasuk tells us, it emphasizes that point of togetherness. Hey asfu v'agidu lechem es asher yikabtsu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov al Yisrael avicha. Es asher yikra eschem b'achras hayamim, hikabtsu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov al Yisrael avichem. A lashon of asifa and a lashon of kibbutz in the same Pasuk. Sefer Charedim explains, hey asfu means physically gather. Gather together. But then it's so important, hikavtsu, that there should be a kibbutz. They had to remove all hatred, jealousy, animosity in order to carry on the legacy of Yaakov. They had to actually feel together, not just physically be in proximity to each other. And maybe the difference between how the Torah describes a Nazir Hashem and how the Navi describes the Nazir Elokim can be understood based on the fact that Hashem represents Midas HaRachamim and Elokim represents Midas HaDin, and that the Torah's model of a Nazir is by the Torah definition, the Torah model is a temporary arrangement. Stam Nazirus Shloshim Yom. 30 days, he lives this way, and then he adapts back into normal society with regular people. There's a certain sense of Midas HaRachamim in a person's ability to return back to normal life, to go back to behaving like everybody else, to recognize that when he had to be different, when he had to be unique, when he had to be separated, that was a temporary matzav. And that temporary matzav is not a new normal, as they like to say nowadays. It was temporary. But life is going to return to the way it was supposed to be together with other people. Shimshon was not so. Shimshon was destined to be apart from other people forever. He spent significant time living among Plishtim. He was a Nazir, Mibetan, he was a Nazir for the duration of his life. And he never experienced the camaraderie of normal friendship, of normal connection to people. Whatever he did on his own. He had no siblings. We don't know of any friends that Shimshon may have had. The one relationship that's supposed to have the most trust, the one relationship where you're supposed to have the most sense of togetherness, that's literally kegufo, ishto kegufo, that of a spouse, where no one judges you. And that's, for Shimshon, it was full of distrust and suspicion. The whole relationship was fraught with all these terrible, terrible feelings that you have between husband and wife, each one thinking what the other one's going to do and how the other one's going to bring about their downfall. Is an awful, awful kind of relationship to have. You know, I just, Rav Eliyahu Goldberg told a story recently of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Someone came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I forget who it was, maybe it was a politician or something, and said to the Rebbe, I've heard of rabbis before, but I've never heard of a Rebbe. Well, what's a Rebbe? So, by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it was interesting because there were certain questions that his followers, his Hasidim, in a million years would never ask him, right? They would never have this kind of conversation. They were terrified to ask this kind of thing. But he would meet with, like, you know, on his terms, of course. You know, he was like a king. You came to him at 3 a.m. if he said so. But, and it didn't matter if you were a head of state or something. You come to Crown Heights, he's not coming to you. But people would come, and they could ask him whatever they wanted, and they could have conversations over there. So this person says to him, what is a Rebbe? So he says, oh, that's a good question. A Rebbe is a friend. So the guy said, well, I know what a friend is. It doesn't seem that it's a friend. The way people talk about it, it doesn't seem that it's a friend. I have friends. So the Rebbe said, I don't know that you have friends. You have a lot of acquaintances, I'm sure. People that you get along with, people that you spend time together with. That's an acquaintance. You know what a real friend is? He said, a real friend is someone who, even when you reveal your own vulnerabilities, even when you reveal your own weaknesses, is not going to judge you for them. And is going to love you no matter what. Is going to love you anyway, even when therefore you don't have to have your guard up in front of them. You can just be. You can be yourself, and you could describe your fears and your anxieties and what brings you joy, and you don't have to worry about how that's going to change the relationship, because it won't, because there's genuine love. He said that's what a Rebbe is. A Rebbe is a friend. That's how he understood it. You know, in the Sheva Brachos, we say that we give the bracha of Gilad Rina Dizav Cheva Ava V'Achva V'Shalom V'Reyus. That's ultimate. That's the ideal. The ideal is to get to a point in a marriage where there's actual friendship in that sense. So this is something that Shimshon, he never had. He never had such a relationship. Not with his wife, not with anybody else. He didn't have friends. He didn't have people that he can confide in, that he can trust, that he can speak to. And that is a Midas Hadin. No matter how great he was, no matter what a hero he was in Jewish history, and he was, still, there's something missing from the life of such a person, and there's something that's particularly harsh about such a life. That's not a Nazir Hashem. It's a Nazir Elokim. My friend Rabbi Yehuda Balzum told me that he recently reread the Rav Moshe's famous tshuvas about scotch and sherry casks. I don't know if you're familiar with these tshuvas. For those who learned Avodah Zarah this year, is very nogeya. Rav Moshe and Rabbi Teitz, Zichrono Levracha, had a back and forth on their thoughts about scotch and sherry casks. So I was just thinking, when I mentioned Rav Moshe, I just got in the mail today. Someone was watching my Zooms and they saw my Gedolim pictures. So a guy sent me all these beautiful Gedolim pictures. I have magnificent pictures of Rav Moshe now. So isn't that beautiful? So anyway, so I have a whole bunch. So what was I saying? Yes, Rav Moshe had these back and forths with Rav Teitz, where Rav Teitz was trying to convince him to say that it was us, and Rav Moshe just kind of refused. And, you know, but Rav Moshe writes that a bal nefesh should be machmir. He's mekil, he's absolutely mekil, but he writes a bal nefesh should be machmir. And then Rav Moshe writes something fascinating, and he says, you know, I'm generally machmir, but when the chevra is having a lechayim, then you know I'll have a lechayim also. I don't want to stick out among the chevra, so you know he doesn't want to be different. Now, I don't know what kind of world it would have to be where Rav Moshe Feinstein is like one of the guys, you know, where he's, you know, throw back some shots with Rav Moshe Feinstein. And like, I don't know, I can't imagine like what the metzius would be where Rav Moshe would envision that he's like, yeah, just one of the chevra having, but that sensitivity, that's something that a bal nefesh should be machmir. But a Jew belongs with other Jews, and a Jew connects with other Jews in a way that obviously is halachically permissible, but that's a value also. And he valued being among other people and to not have any unnecessary barriers between himself and other Jews. So, you know, this particular nekuda of the Jewish people coming together, of feeling like we're connected with each other, is obviously, you know, other than the actual illness and death that we've seen over the past several months, second to that, and, you know, and a close second probably, has been one of the more challenging things for our community in particular. Now, I was just on a radio show today. I got a call from someone asking if I would spend 15 minutes on a radio show discussing for Israelis to understand what the situation is in New York with everything, with the coronavirus and with the riots and all this stuff. So I said yes, not thinking for a second that the radio show was going to be in Hebrew. So I said, yeah, no problem. And then like 5 minutes before the show, he's like, okay, it's obviously entirely Be'evrit. And I'm like, what? I can't do that. He's like, no, you have to. We're going on in 5 minutes. So I broke my teeth for a few, you know, for 15 minutes trying to describe, you know, the situation of what we're going through and what we've been experiencing. And the idea of social distancing has been a very, very challenging part, because so much of, you know, so we were describing why was the virus so much worse for the frum community in New York than it was for everybody else? And the answer is because we have bate knesios. We gather, beknisa, we gather. We have makil kihilos perabim. That's the way we do things. We have mishloach manos ish l'rei eyu. We have this sense of always coming together. We're always coming together. That's our nature. Rav Lapiansky said recently that I think it was Rav Lapiansky who said that the social distancing is so challenging because the Beis HaKnesses by definition is a place of social closening. So is the yeshiva. That's what we do. We come close. That's all that we do. So it is a very, very great challenge to get through such a time. And the message of the Nesi'im and the Agalos is that regardless of where our asifa is, the he'asfu being the physical connection, and when that's going to come back, we have to realize that may be suspended momentarily. That may be something that for the time being is not happening. But the hikavtsu, the kavutza, the coming together on an emotional level, that has to be strengthened, and that has to be something that we feel. I was listening to a shir online. You know, they're all Zoom shir. Every shir is a Zoom shir. So someone started with everyone turn on your camera, so at least we could see you. Okay, meaning I understand. It gives more of a sense of togetherness, more of a sense of at least you see who you're talking to. Supposedly it slows down the Zoom. I don't know, but you know, it's very hard to feel that connection, and that's something we need to be consciously working on. We need to be cognizant of and continue. continue to consciously be working on. And that's why we see, I think, so many failures in the requirements of social distancing, because people aren't comfortable with it. They're not happy with it. We feel the need to connect, and we're sensitive to that. Absolutely, we're sensitive to people's need to connect, and it's a genuine need. It's a real need. Obviously, we're not able to do it physically, but we have to try our best to do it emotionally. Okay. All right.